Good morning. It's good to be in the South. I don't have to go take two. I am an alcoholic. My name is Ashley. Y'all look beautiful. I have a sobriety date. It is the 30th of December, 2006. I also come from the family disease of alcoholism, and my sobriety date happens to be my papa's belly button birthday. He was an alcoholic, and I consider my sobriety date to be a birthday present from him. I think he was wink, wink, kid, I didn't get this program, and I hope you do. And so I intend to hang on to it with everything I've got through the fellowship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the literature and sponsorship. I have a home group. It's called the Beacon Group. I hope you'll come join us, either in Boston in person or perhaps through Zoom. We meet Mondays through Fridays at 12 noon Eastern Time. We're focused on the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. We believe in recovery through practicing the 12 steps, unity through practicing the traditions, and service through practicing the 12 concepts of service. And in addition, my experience has been that I can make peace through myself through these 12 steps, and I can make peace in my relationships through these 12 traditions, and I can live at peace in a difficult world through these 12 concepts of service. And also, we meet on Monday nights, and we go through the book paragraph by paragraph, and then we have a speaker meeting on Wednesday nights, and all this is available to learn online through our website. And we also put our steering committee, that's brave, online. So if you want to try to see all three legacies at work in a steering committee meeting, you can try to join us for that. I have a sponsor. We're three legacy women. And I also have the honor of sponsoring some women who are here tonight. And my chosen sister, Sam, is here with me. It's morning. I'm from Berlin. It's night there. I came here from Berlin to be with you. And I've been asked to speak on steps 10 and 11, which to me are deeply spiritual steps. And before I even say anything about that, I just want to say I grew up with some pretty voices, and I've been very blessed by hearing our songstress. And I feel like she reminds me a lot of my sister's voice, and Terry reminded me a lot of my mother. And so I've been really walloped by the experience of being in fellowship with my sisters and siblings and women of all kinds this weekend. And I've certainly gotten what I believe to the best of my ability to know what is good for me. I've gotten out of this weekend, at least insofar as my own knowledge can take me, what I needed to get out of this weekend. And when we talk about steps 10 and 11, there seems to be a little bit of confusion about them. And if you're not aware, there was even a motion taken to the General Service Conference that made it all the way to the Board of Trustees Literature Committee, that step 11 from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous be moved in the Big Book to a different page in the book. Because there is not a lot of certainty amongst everyone or consensus amongst everyone that step 11 is in the right place in the book. So what I'd like to do is start with something about the promises, because I'm feeling the presence of my Creator. And then we're going to read the text a little bit together and just do a little workshopping of it. And then I'm going to share with you about how I practice step 10 and practice step 11. And I use all 36 principles when I do my inventory. And we're going to see where this takes us. And I hope that there's something in there for you. And we're going to start with why we bother to do this. You know, as it says in There Is a Solution that was just read, why bother with this self-searching and the leveling of my pride and investing all of this self-inquiry and self-reflection into a way of life that demands rigorous honesty and a good deal of work and effort? Well, it says over on page 85 that If I had carefully, I'm very overcome by emotion, that if I have carefully followed these directions, and these are some of the promises that come true with step 10, and there's the promises about alcoholism and how my drinking is relieved and I react sanely and normally, and then there's the spiritual promises, and there are promises about my attitude and about my ability to live life and to have power and knowledge, you know, and at first it says get a God, any God, a doorknob, and then it says I need a God who has all power and all knowledge and inspiration. There's a pretty radical shift there that happens from step 2 and a group of drunks as a God to a God that is this magnificent something that's fundamentally inside of me. But anyway, it says, if I have carefully followed directions, I have begun, so I have started to sense, some sort of sense, the flow, which is an input of spirit, inspiration. It's the sense of, you know, inspiration. It's like the beginning of God's breath into me, and on the outflow of my breath, I'm breathing into the infinite mercy of God. There's some sort of exchange that's happening in this profoundly intimate way that is the imprint of my Creator, that is this deeply personal relationship. I'm in community with something that is this fundamental idea that exists only inside of me. It's so relational and it's so personal, and it starts to happen in step 5 when it says, I thank God that I'm starting to know God better. And by the time I get to step 10, I have this, to some extent, to a certain possibility, to a beginning of God consciousness, God conscious. And what does it mean to be conscious? It means to have memory of something without needing to recall it. It's just there. And I've begun to have this vital, this life-giving sixth sense. So what does it mean to put that in its opposite? Without it, I'm not awake. Wake up. On awakening. Wake up. Where am I unconscious? I'm unconscious in my disease. First step. And by the time I'm getting here, I'm starting to wake up. And there are many ways to be awake. I woke up this morning. But I also woke up because my consciousness, my unconscious, which is awake in God as I sleep at night, has these dreams now. My life is very, my God consciousness is very efficient in my sleep. I have dreams about trauma. I have dreams about grief. I wake up and I'm crying, but I'm crying out to a higher power, the fundamental of idea of which exists inside of me. You know, I'm not wasting time foolishly. Even in my sleep, there's something that's working inside of me because I'm relying and trusting. This third step decision has become enabled inside of me all the time, all the time. It's like the spot check inventory is just, it's enmeshed in a healthy way with this higher power of my understanding. And I'm going to tell you a little story about this. Sorry, I'm just going to have this not sling and cry the whole time I'm up here. You know, my mom kept Kleenex in her bra, and she also had half a tuna salad sandwich in there. And right now, I've just got the Kleenex. So this is an example, you know, and what does it mean to have this reflexive action of a spot check inventory that we practice throughout the day, constantly, continuously, without cessation, without taking a break, invariably, as it says in the dictionary. This is what the tenth step is. It's something we do during the day. And then it says in the evening when we retire, which means when we stop work, when we stop the activities of the majority of our activities of the day. So the tenth step is something we do during the day, or if you're doing shift work, because we acknowledge everyone has a different kind of life and a different kind of schedule, you know, when you finish your work. So what does it mean to bring this into my life and everything that is happening and everything that I'm processing with all the busyness and the input and the instability and the chaos and everything that's just coming at me in the world? So my partner and I spend a lot of time in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which is a very chaotic place. And we have transport into the rainforest, and it takes 3 days to get where we go. You can't get there from here, as they say in Maine. And you really can't get there from here, where we go. And so from Kinshasa, the capital, to get to the research camp that we have in the rainforest, as I said, it takes 3 days. It takes a bush plane. It takes motorbikes through jungle paths in the rainforest, and then it takes walking. And there have been more people who've gone to outer space than non-native people who have gone to where we live in the rainforest. It's exceedingly remote. And when we load the bush plane, we take ourselves and we take provisions. And when we take the bush plane out, because we don't have as much equipment, we try to offer places on the bush plane to people who might need medical care and who might need and want to go to Kinshasa, the capital, for urgent reasons. And these are people of the rainforest who are indigenous and have never left their habitat. And one day when we were in the bush and we were going to have a plane going out, someone came up, a young man came to our camp, and he said, "Mama Serafin needs to go to Kinshasa." And we said, "Of course." So then we were in the village after we had taken our motorbikes and done all the things that we need to do to get to the bush plane. And someone came up and said, "Mama Serafin has tuberculosis," which, if you don't know, is an infectious pulmonary disease that's highly contagious. And I'm working in public health. I also know there's something called multiple drug resistant tuberculosis. And we were going to be in this small aluminum container that's about the length of these tables. It's a very small bush plane. So we were immediately pitched into this moral dilemma of, do we take someone who has a possible or very likely fatal illness, but to which we would all be exposed and possibly have drug-resistant tuberculosis? And this became my 10-step inventory. This became my spot check inventory. And it also became a tradition one inventory for me, the common welfare of the group, because it also teaches me in the 12 and 12 that the individual matters a lot. So how do I reconcile and hold these paradoxical elements? And also, how do I practice my faith to the infinite value and worth of each individual life? So, and I had no way of communicating with an infectious disease doctor. There's no cell phone service. There's nothing there. There's no infrastructure or healthcare. So anyway, to get to the moral of the story, we decide that Mama Serafin can't ride with us because it imperils the greatest number of lives, because we strive in our 12 concepts of service and the general warranties of the conference for substantial unanimity. I practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in all my affairs to the best of my ability, because I didn't grow up knowing anything about how to get along in a group, and so I looked to these principles to guide my social conduct. And when the bush plane landed, we also knew we wanted an informed group conscience, which is our tradition too, and so we consulted with the bush pilot, and he says, "I don't ask people what they have, I just take them. I don't ask people what they have, I just take them." And so we allowed his vote to have some additional weight, and we decided we would take Mama Serafin on the plane. So Mama Serafin got on the plane with us, and she couldn't walk. I mean, she looked like an HIV/AIDS patient from back in the 1990s, and her legs were very thin, and her neck was very thin. And anyway, we got on the plane with her, and she sat, and of course she couldn't properly wear a mask. This was a woman of the rainforest. And as we were sitting together, and I kept looking back at her and just watching her as she saw the canopy of her beloved rainforest from this perspective that was beyond her wildest imagination, and the rest of us were sitting up, you know, in the plane with our masks on, I looked back at her again, and she was dead. And, you know, I thought about what it says here about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. What was I to do? And I thought, I am infinitely connected with this woman. And I said, you know, I wasn't going to tell everybody else on the plane, because we had a 5-hour bush plane ride into Kinshasa. And there was no need to create chaos for them before the chaos needed to be commenced. And so I just looked at Mama Serafin and I communed with her spirit. And I felt the experience of this God consciousness and this vital sixth sense. And I sat with her in the 10th and the 11th step experience of, may you be at peace. May the God of your understanding infuse you. And I won't tell you all the things that I said, but I just communed with her, because what else was there for me to do? And this is the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous when it says, you know, we have begun to flow the sense of his spirit into us. All I could do was have a spiritual experience with this now deceased infectious corpse. I mean, it was a little bit absurd, but at the same time, it had to be a spiritual experience, right? And so my partner and I are playing hangman while I'm looking back at Mama Serafin. I mean, it's just kind of beyond the wildest construction of human weirdness. And then eventually this other sick woman who we had on the plane turned around and she goes, "She's dead." And then it was on, and all the Congolese dysfunction began, and all, including extortion. So that's just an example of how I try to use the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in a 10-step inventory and try to have it really guide my steps piece by piece by piece by piece. So how's that for a start? So let's look at the text a little bit, because as I indicated, there's a little bit of confusion. And if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. If you're not on step 10 yet, just keep working the steps, looking at the literature, ask someone to sponsor you. You know, someone else who spoke from the podium said, if you don't have a sponsor yet, please try to hook up with someone here before you leave this conference. Sponsorship is a wonderful way to learn how to be in community and fellowship with another woman. You know, it says on page 84, this thought. So what is the thought? What is the thought that brings us, that helps us arrive at step 10? It's the thought of the ninth step promises, which suggests we continue. And if we continue to read the paragraph, it says to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. And automatically, there's a promise. We have entered the world of the Spirit, and it's a capital S. You know, so I'm not necessarily living on a human basis with my limited and finite understanding. I'm living in the world of the Spirit. I'm communing with Mama Seraphine's spirit as she has passed into the infinite mercy of God. Our next function, my next purpose, my next performance, what does function mean? It's purpose, is to grow. These are the growth steps in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It's a daytime step. It should continue for my lifetime. Continue to watch. Watch, 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 wake up, wake up, wake up. And these are my inventory questions. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up like a chin hair, they just always come back. We ask God, here's our prayer, at once, without pause, without hesitation, without waiting, to remove them. We discuss them. This is our step 8 and our step 9 in hearing and step 10. Immediately, without hesitation, we make amends. There's our step 9. Quickly, we do not delay. If we have harmed someone, my answer is usually yes to that question. And then we resolutely, which means firmly, turn our thoughts. There are so many verbs in this paragraph, to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. Have you counted how many times the word continue occurs in that paragraph? We persist. We carry on. And so, obviously, steps 4 through 9 in particular are contained in all of this. And, you know, a code is a set of rules about my behavior and my norms. And so one of the things that we're going to talk about a bit later is that love and tolerance is my code, but it doesn't mean I don't have values and principles, because I have at least 36 of those, plus I have the 4 absolutes, which were mentioned yesterday. And this doesn't mean that I become a doormat, because if anything, I have learned how to stand for something without standing against my fellows. And I have a voice, both in Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a voice and a vote in my home group, and I have a voice in the world. Because I learn in Concept 1, which talks in AA, that the home group has the ultimate and final responsibility for AA as a whole. I learned that as an individual, that I am ultimately responsible for my life, which is why in step 3 I've turned my life over to the care of a God of my understanding. And then I learn in concept 3 that I have the right to make decisions for myself. And I learn how to make decisions I can live with, because I have this vital sixth sense that is coming to me as the promises of doing this inventory. Why else would I do this inventory? Why else would I do this reflection? Because the unfinished business of the day, where I no longer conceal things from myself, is exactly where I'm infused with the spirituality and the tenderness of knowing that I'm a woman who can hold my own hand. Sometimes people say, where have I dropped God's hand? But if God is fundamentally inside of me, and God exists in me like the light inside of the flame of a candle, when I hold my own hand, I'm holding God's hand. and God is as near to me as my own breath, inspiration to inhale and to exhale. This inventory is peacemaking with myself. We constructively review our day when we start at night in step 11. It's a self-building process. It's a self-esteem exercise. And then in concept 4, I learned that my participation is the key to harmony. I get to participate in my life. I get to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to participate in a community. And then in voice, I think someone might be filming, and that's not appropriate. Thank you. And then in concept 5, I learn as a minority voice, I have a duty and an obligation to speak up. It says I have ceased fighting, but I do speak up, and there's a difference because peacekeepers do not go to peaceful zones. They go to hostile zones, but it's the energy infused with this vital sixth sense. And having received strength, inspiration, and direction from my higher power who has all knowledge and all power, it's the way I go about doing these things. It is the way I stand up to men in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not that I'm fighting. It's the way I'm using my voice for common welfare and unity. So let's talk about that piece for a little bit. Because I haven't even gone back and told you my story as to why I'm even here and why I qualify for Alcoholics Anonymous as someone who has a desire to stop drinking. So I was molested by a man for the first time when I was 7. And I say that I remember because there was a time that I don't remember when I was in a Kmart, which is a little bit like a Target. That a man attacked me and tried to kidnap me. And that man is still a registered sex offender in Rutherford County, Tennessee, but I have no memory of it because my brain has compartmentalized it and spared me from the significance of that particular trauma. And then I was commercially sexually exploited by both men and women the summer I was 15 years old, and I was so-called modeling in Japan. And I talk about violence in my story, so please take care of yourself. The first thing that happened on the first day that I was doing the so-called modeling is I was told by the adults to take off all my clothes and walk around the room in front of them. And that was the first day, and the rest of it was just hell and torture and male entitlement to my body, and there were rapes and there was molestation and there was all the rest of it. And so I really appreciated what Cindy talked about in her podium talk, because male entitlement to female bodies happens in the world, and it happens in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would say 5 out of the 9 women I sponsor at the moment were brought into AA by men who were sexually exploiting them. It's called 13th stepping, but let's call something what it actually is. And so what happens in the rooms can be a reflection of what's happening in the world at large. And we do have a safety statement in AA. And we need to have the courage to use concept 5, which talks about the duty and the obligation of the minority voice to speak up, to make the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous have common welfare and unity, so that women of all kinds can get sober from the disease of alcoholism and not fear male violence. And that is a tall order, and we can go through with it. And it's not necessarily something that we're going to address for this entire talk, but it is a spot check inventory that I take, and these 36 principles guide me when I speak up in the moment. And the spot check inventory happens as something in my body, and it happens as something that I reason out with my sponsor, and sometimes I talk to my outside help. So this is what it can look like when I use step 10 as an inventory. So, for example, I was at a talk at the Appalachian Roundup, and this guy was telling his story. He was giving a step 6 and step 7 talk, and he said, a word that's no longer used in most circles. Women who are trapped in systems of prostitution are called prostituted women, and he called them something else that's very derogatory, and he said he thought they and cocaine were bad. And the whole room laughed. Well, think about if he said Jews. The whole room would not laugh. But in AA, we still laugh at a category of people called women when a man tells the joke from the podium. And so afterwards, I stood in line to thank the speaker, as I've been taught, and I said, I would love to visit with you. And he said, oh, anything I can do to help. So I talked to my sponsor. And of course, I'm not telling you his name because we put principles above personalities. We still practice the principles, right? It's not about being personally punitive. That's concept 12 in the general warranties of the conference. It's not about being an incitement to public controversy. It's not about being personally punitive. It's not about putting myself in unqualified authority over him. It's about common welfare and unity. But we can have unity without being uniform. And so I did this inventory, I talked to my sponsor, and I called him, and I started to say, I felt uncomfortable with that, it felt inappropriate, and he was not amused, and he did not take it well, and he took my inventory, my partner was listening, and eventually where we landed was that he had told that joke hundreds of times, and no one had the courage to speak up to him about it. And when I talked to my outside help about it, he said, you know what, Ashley, you will haunt him every time he tells that joke from the podium. And that's where we left it. And that's where we left it. And it is not easy being a leader. It can be very lonely afterwards. But we also have concept 9, which I use in my 10-step inventory. Good personal leadership at all service levels is a necessity. And I believed when I took my inventory and thought about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction, and carefully following directions and using the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, that was exercising good personal leadership, because I love you and I care about you, and no one cared about me when I was being exploited, and I am going to do my best not to let that happen to you in the fellowship and the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's that part. And it's not for everybody, but I will do it. And I will also take a spot check inventory if a tradition is being violated in a room. If someone brings in outside literature or they bring in a particular religious affiliation, and that should be the job of the chairperson, whoever is chairing, or the secretary. And the women I sponsor are getting really good at doing this. But if the chairperson doesn't do it, it falls to good personal leadership, and there's a way to do it, you know. And if there are a lot of newcomers present, that's generally my litmus test, and that's my spot check inventory, like, you know, my armpits get sweaty, my hands get a little bit shaky, you know, I get a little crumbly feeling inside. But I will speak up, and I'll say, it's information, not an indictment. And during this 1 hour, we are asked to be obedient to the unenforceable, and all obedient means the root is to hear. And we don't have an opinion. It's an outside issue. We just only use literature that is published by Alcoholics Anonymous and that is published by the Grapevine. And the other 23 hours of the day, I am absolutely free to use everything that is valuable to me, and it becomes a part of my personal experience, strength, and hope. Can we just for this 1 hour only use what is published by the AA Grapevine and by Alcoholics Anonymous? And it's really simple. It's really simple. And it's not always popular. And that's why I have a higher power and a sponsor, and then I run to my car. But it's important, because I believe that AA needs to survive in order for me to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and the 3 glasses of white wine and the pink champagne, because I was a white wine and champagne alcoholic, and I need a place to recover from that. And I need a place to recover from that. So let's move on to what it means to recover from alcoholism. And it says here, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. So am I fighting, or am I just standing up for something? I'm probably doing a little bit of both, because it's spiritual progress, not perfection, right? But I do it to the best of my ability. And I just always have had this in me, right? And my sponsor once said to me, Ashley, can you ever let it go? And I was like, I don't know. I really don't know. But no one stood up for me when I was a kid, and so I've got this in me. And so my task with my Creator is to have this bittersweet alchemy where Alcoholics Anonymous works on me. And we're going to hear that in this next section, because it says, for this time, sanity will have returned. Did you know that in the 10th step, that we get our sanity back? That we get our sanity back. I was insane in step 2. But if I'm willing to do this inventory and the spot check reflection continuously and constantly throughout the day, I get my sanity back. I actually get my willpower back a little bit later, too, because there's the correct use of my will. And it says, I will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil as if from a hot flame. I react sanely, there's that word again, and normally. And I will find this has happened automatically. I will see that my new attitude toward liquor has been given without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. I am not fighting, neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Oh my God, that's all I ever wanted was to feel safe. I have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for me. I'm neither cocky nor afraid. This is my experience. This is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And of course, that's a warning. Now, all of this is written in passive language. It is done to me. This is my higher power working on me. I put in this effort of inventory, and higher power does this spiritual alchemy on me. And so I'm going to tell you a story about this coming true for me. I was in Congo. We're back in Africa. And we were walking in the rainforest at 4:20 in the morning, as we do, to go see these great apes that we observe while we're there. And I had on a headlamp. And the headlamp wasn't working very well. It was very dim. There was something about it that was malfunctioning. And so I was walking very, very fast to try to keep up with the tracker in front of me, from whom I was borrowing light. And it was very difficult to see. I mean, normally I see very well in the dark. I've come down Half Dome in Yosemite as the full moon with no headlamp. Not that that's advisable, but I've done it. And I went through a tunnel of foliage, and so it was really pitch black, and no moonlight was filtering through. And when I came out of the foliage, because I'd gone super slowly, the tracker was very far ahead of me, and I broke into this extremely powerful stride to catch up, and I was looking ahead and not looking down, and I tripped on something called a lakuro branch, which is a tall, thin, narrow branch. And as I fell, my leg broke in 4 places, and my foot was paralyzed. And I cried out, my leg is breaking, as my leg was breaking. And I felt all of that happening inside the skin of my body. And when I fell to the ground, I dragged myself over to, you know, the transect is about this wide. So I just dragged my bottom over. And the two trackers, Malaika and Dieu Merci, whose name means thanks be to God, and the researcher, Maud, came running over. And thus began an agonizing ordeal, an absolutely agonizing ordeal. And Maud said she needed to take my boot off, which, you know, I recoiled as if from a hot flame. But what I didn't know is that my foot was paralyzed, and so I actually didn't feel it when she pulled the boot off. And I said to Malaika, this is an emergency. This is a tragedy. You must run back to camp to wake up Martin, my partner. It was an hour and a half already back to camp. So he started to run, and Dieu Merci folded himself up into what is, in a normal yoga class, a very difficult position, and sat to bolster my legs so that the bones wouldn't move. And he sat that way for 5 hours without flinching and held my gaze with these compassionate eyes. And what I thought about was the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, when we sit in fellowship together and listen to each other's stories. He couldn't do it for me, but he did it with me. I thought of the we, the first step of the first word. So Martin came running back, and he had the sat phone, but the foliage of the forest was too dense and it wouldn't work, and he had to leave me again sitting there. And eventually, five hours later, when all I had was a stick to bite on for my pain management, a man named Papa Jean showed up, and he reset the bones of my legs with his bare hands. And eventually, Malaika and some other men had a piece of fabric, and they put me on it, and that was my makeshift, stretcher. And they carried me out of the forest, and then they got me back to camp, and they sent me on something, and it collapsed. It was almost funny. And then Papa Jean had to set my leg again with his bare hands because he hadn't done it properly. And Martin and I just put our arms around each other's necks and locked eyes and we screamed. And it was just, that was like the end of the end of the end of the pain that I really couldn't tolerate. But I had this something in mind from an outside spiritual teacher. When I get to my edge, soften. When I get to my edge, soften. And I had just the day before read a book about the spirituality of the 12 steps by an outside author whom I won't mention because it's not published by AA. But it does support the spirituality of the 12 steps. And in that book, the author said that in my higher power concept, I get to craft. It just reinforced what it talks about in We Agnostics in step two, that I get to craft this God of my understanding and that my higher power suffers with me, that my higher power suffers with me. And I had that, and I had the faith of my childhood. I had the conventional faith with which I was raised. I had the higher power that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous through my step work. And I knew that my higher power was suffering with me. And I also knew that I couldn't have expectations, which I learned in here. But that's actually a contradiction because AA teaches me to expect miracles. AA teaches me to expect inspiration, intuitive thought. It teaches me to expect inspiration and that my thinking will become a working part of my mind. And it says that my thinking will become on the plane of inspiration. And so I knew somehow that this God was suffering with me. And I couldn't have expectations about if and when I got help in a country where there's no healthcare infrastructure. But that somehow inhaling the breath of God and exhaling with the breath of God and knowing that people sat in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and sobered up in aluminum chairs where people handed them cups of coffee that were only halfway full because they were shaking so bad the coffee would spill on them if the cup was all the way full, that I would get through this. So the story goes on, and ultimately it took 67 hours before I got a painkiller. But along the way, I was offered alcohol as a painkiller. I was sitting in the village in the dirt before I was put on a motorbike, which was going to be a six-hour ride. And on that motorbike, I was asked to bend my leg, and I couldn't bend my leg. And so I'll keep this part of it short because it's not a lot of fun. But someone said, Mama Ashley, Latoka, which is the corn mash they make in the bush. And just like I read to you, I recoiled as if from a hot flame. I reacted sanely and normally. The problem had been removed. There was no debate. There was no issue. There was no hysteria. There was no indecision. I simply said no thank you. The 10-step promises were alive and well for me. I knew that I would come to a future meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know there's nothing a drink will make better. And I also knew, and it doesn't make me good, right, or perfect. It just means that the steps work. And I also knew that people have buried their children, that they have lost fortunes, that they've endured climate catastrophe, that they've buried loved ones and seen, you know, precious sponsors die, that we go through things and we can meet calamity, if not with serenity, then at least with sobriety. And that I would show newcomers that it is possible to stay sober. And then the next thing happened, you know, and this is that plane of inspiration that we can expect when we work the 10th and the 11th steps. There, you know, Congo is a very sociable place. It's very volatile. You know, there's no family planning. There's kids everywhere. Everyone is super poor. It's the fourth poorest country in the world. It's a very cunning, baffling place. And everyone was screaming and hollering, and how was I going to get on this motorbike? And it was a spectacle, and people were excited for inappropriate reasons. There was something going on. And, you know, that I couldn't get on the motorbike was like just the heyday of something to talk about. And finally, this one man's voice rose above the din, and Martin said, you know, quieted the crowd, and he was like, you, what have you to say? And he said, she needs to ride backwards. And so the idea was that Papa DDA would ride the motorbike and I would sit like this with my back to Papa DDA, stick my leg out and hold my broken leg with my bare hands for 6 hours. Great idea. And then Papa DDA said someone should ride facing forward with their chest to her chest so that her leg could rest. And Martin said, who will ride with her? Crickets. The place had been mayhem. It was crickets. And then Martin raised the ante and he said, somebody sober. There's nobody sober at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Kokalapori Village. And then I say, je veux un homme de Dieu, a man of God. Plane of inspiration, vital sixth sense, God consciousness. If my body was going to be pressed in between these two men for 6 hours, while I was hemorrhaging, when my leg was becoming deformed in the heat, I wanted a man of God. And Maradona came forward and rode with me. And you know, we're, people are put into our lives as we need them. So eventually I got to South Africa. Eventually, I was not an amputee. And I just want to tell you this one story. Just moments of grace. And this is why I just cry, you know. The little man who came in, and he was petite of stature. That's why I call him a little man. He was very slight. He came in every morning at 4:30 to draw my blood, and I'm very hard from which to draw blood. To me, he was the physical embodiment of the God of my understanding. He came in every day, and when he took my blood, I just wept. I just wept. He was the physical wearing of skin of my higher power, and he somehow got me through that entire experience. I still know his name. He was just beautiful, and it's difficult to overstate how difficult that experience was. But I was sober. I had the promises of the 10th and the 11th step, and I had a community around me. And I have learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that there will be a fellowship around me. And it was enough. And it was enough. So that's a story that I wanted to share with you. Thank you for letting me share it. So we just have a few minutes left. I don't really know how much time we have left, but I think we have a few minutes left. So I want to talk about where it says, it does say when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. So sometimes I actually do this at night, and sometimes I do it when I finish my activities of the day. But it becomes this beautiful reciprocal meditation with my higher power. And I ask these questions, was I resentful? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest or afraid? And the answers are usually yes, to some extent. But in particular, I focus on was I afraid? Because I try to conceal things from myself. I do things behind my own back. What? You don't do that? That's a novel idea to you. And when I stop doing that, I find that I am protected from nothing, but I am inexplicably sustained in everything. That I am protected from nothing, but I am inexplicably sustained in everything. Because God is inside of me, like the light inside of a candle. And that flame, where that light is flickering, is also the way that I am inside of God, the way that God is inside of me. And there is nothing for which to be afraid. And I was doing this meditation the other morning, and I woke up crying. I did this meditation in the evening, and I fell asleep, and I woke up crying, and I said something to myself that I had never said before. Something of which I was afraid, and I was completely set free from it. And I was no longer tired. I'd been exhausted for 6 weeks. A lot of travel and various activities. We AAs are active folks. And I was no longer tired because I'd had this thing on the, as Mildred was saying last night, under the level of consciousness that had been weighing me down. But when I was no longer concealing it from myself by practicing this step 11 inventory and taking it to my higher power in this pondering, it was alleviated from me. And then it goes on to say, You know, have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person? And then sometimes it's so mundane. You know, this is a profoundly spiritual series of steps for me, as I think is maybe coming across. But then it's like, did I flush the toilet in public? And that will absolutely live rent-free between my two ears. And I'll think about it for 3 weeks if I didn't in a single example, even if it's only number one. And then I'll have to call my sponsor, and she'll say, well, Ashley, why were you in such a hurry and didn't think that your higher power was taking care of you? Why were you in such a hurry that you didn't think that you had ample time to hold God's hand? And it's not what she thinks of me, it's what I think of myself. Because the most important way I can be in integrity is with the God of my own understanding. Because when I think well of myself and I'm congruent with these principles, then loving you is no problem at all. Loving you is no problem at all. So do I need to share something with someone else? Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or did I see what I could do for others, what I could pack into the stream of life? And then it says, we're careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because that diminishes our usefulness to others. And one of the things I dare say that we women in AA do too much, or can veer into doing too much, because we talk about God, self, and others, is we do sometimes forget to put ourselves on the list. And I would venture to say it's a talk for another time, but we can't transmit what we do not have. And we need to practice a little self-love and know that we cannot transmit what we do not have. And there is a certain amount of pride in reverse to think that I can be of service to another woman if my own house is not in order. Dangerous fighting words in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I just love how it says here, after making my review, I add God's forgiveness. I don't say for forgiveness. There's not a preposition there. It's just God's forgiveness. And then what corrective measures should be taken? And this is where I get to practice my moral imagination. What tools do I have that I didn't use? How can I do better? How can I strengthen and grow myself with God's help? And then Bill also talks about this in the 12 and 12 in step 11. How can I expand my choices? Like where it says, I may face indecision. That's an opportunity to exercise my choices and to grow my imagination. So that's a little bit of a mishmash of talking about the text and telling some stories. And then, of course, it goes into On Awakening. And I'm just going to end with this part here, where it says, it talks about our thinking and how we have brains to use. I think that we're meant to think in Alcoholics Anonymous because it uses the word think 14 times in the next two paragraphs. 14 times between thinking and inspiration. I can be a woman of confidence in Alcoholics Anonymous if I'm practicing steps 10 and 11 in the way that they're laid out in this book. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of my mind. I might pay for this presumption with absurd actions, and if I learn to laugh at myself, I grow up. But my thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. And then it says, I conclude the period of meditation, so this has been my meditation. This has been my meditation. And then I just want to jump to this part where it says, we select and memorize prayers which emphasize the ideals that we've been discussing. So I've literally done that. I've gone to the world's great traditions and I've selected prayers that emphasize the ideals that are talked about in these two steps. And I memorize those prayers and I slowly go through them, starting with the prayer that's outlined in step 11 in the 12 and 12. And so it sounds like this. And close your eyes with me. And it slows my mind down and it slows my breath down. And it just makes the higher power so real to me. Make me an instrument of your peace where there is hatred. Let me bring love. And for a kid who grew up the way I did, in the family disease of alcoholism and then developing my own defects of character as survival strategies that didn't work very well, To know that with these 36 principles, I could be an instrument who has a vital sixth sense, in whom God subsists like the flame subsists in a candle, and could bring some love, is truly a revolutionary idea and act. And so I invite you to think about these steps and to do this beautiful prayerful reflection that is constructive. Where do you conceal from yourself your own beauty? Where can you build your healthy self-esteem and know that God totally loves and adores you, so that when you wake up in the morning, your thought life is on the plane of inspiration, and you can be a woman of confidence and know that you're responsible for your own life, concept one. You can make decisions that you can live with, concept three. That you have the right to participate with harmony, concept four. That you have a duty and an obligation to speak up as the minority voice, concept five. That you can exercise good personal leadership, concept nine. That you have common welfare and unity, and you can have that without being uniform, tradition one. That you can be a part of an informed group conscience and not control the outcome, tradition two. That you are autonomous in tradition four. And that you can do all of that according to concept 12 and not be personally punitive, not put yourself in unqualified authorities, authority over others, and live in democratic thought and action with the beautiful Creator who presides over us all. This has been my experience by trying to apply steps 10 and 11 and living according to the 36 principles. And I didn't know how to do that when I got here. So I thank you women for showing me a little bit about how it can be true in my life. Thank you so much.